Good morning. The House will come to order. Please stand, including folks in the gallery, if you're able. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Esquivel, and then following that, we will have our opening ceremonies presented by Bridget Tedrow and Dallin McGuire from Salem, who will be singing a verse from the Star Spangled Banner. They are guests of Representative Cameron. Representative Esquivel.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. I did not know there was a fourth verse to the Star Spangled Banner. Thanks for educating at least me, probably many of us. Courtesies, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And colleagues, on your desk are the words to the Star Spangled Banner and the fourth verse, which we heard today on the House floor. And I'd like to say thank you to Bridget Tedrow and Dallin McGuire, who attend Oakville Presbyterian Church in Shedd. Bridget is married to Chase Tedrow, who is a legislative assistant in our office, and they'll be welcoming a new baby into this world come this September. Dallin is 14 years old and homeschooled, enjoys baseball, singing, caring for the many goats, sheep, cats, and other animals that are owned by his family. Welcome, and thank you for blessing us with the fourth verse.
Thank you so much, and congratulations. Further courtesies, Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure today to stand and introduce my able-bodied committee assistant today. She'll stand, Katie Mikesell. She's been with us all session long, and she has just been a gem and a pleasure to work with, and is probably in the job hunting market now. So if anybody knows of any good opportunities, she'd love to talk to you.
Thank you. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam. Madam? No, Mr. Speaker. I got it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm delighted also to introduce the Health Care Committee Assistant, Laura Eads. Laura just did an extraordinary job, and I hardly frightened her at all, I think. And she was right there, always with a smile on her face, always ready to do what needed to be done. Laura is a Beaver, a graduate of OSU. She's fluent in German and in Spanish, and she'd like to teach English in Germany and live abroad for a while. It's been a great pleasure working with you. I've so much appreciated your work. Thank you again. Incidentally, Lara's also looking for a job.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, wanted to introduce the body to our committee, Assistant Terry Riddell, in the Sustainability and Economic Development Committee. She has been a real asset in our committee as we've dealt with a lot of challenging and interesting issues. And I think her calm demeanor and considerable skill has aided our productivity. She comes to the legislature with a lot of experience in public policy, having worked for Groton Kearns for many years in the OUS system and in the president's office across the street at Willamette. So we have that in common as well. She, too, is in the job market and would come with a strong endorsement from me. I'm not sure whether that helps or hurts her, but I did want to make that clear. And she also wanted to say hello to her sister, Marge, in Rhode Island, who is listening to us via the Internet. So we have a perhaps a slightly larger geographic audience today. Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce the newest member of our family, Selena Goldtrust, my daughter-in-law. She'll be joining me in my office as an assistant since we lost our last aide to a job. So with the legislative job fair in process, Selena's also in the mode for looking for work. So please welcome her and refer her to anybody you know who might be hiring.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a couple people. We've already heard about one, but I'm going to add a little bit more about Katie Meixel, who is standing, is sitting over with Representative. She was also our committee assistant in the House Administration Committee. She graduated from Linfield with degrees in political science and music, master's degrees in political science from Northeastern in Boston, plays the piano and the guitar. Hoping to find work after session within the government agency. So if anybody's listening, she is exceptional, and we would love you to consider her. And wants to be president when she grows up, so we appreciate that as well. My other assistant was not able to be with us today, but he is Mike Riley. He's been our assistant in rules, does an exceptional job. He has been a full-time committee staff, services staffer, who has worked with each legislative session since 2001. He enjoys cooking, riding his bike to work, and playing cribbage with his colleagues. He also plays regularly in cribbage tournaments. He holds his B.S. in environmental science from Oregon State University. Thank you for your great work in our committees.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to also introduce Jennifer Ranstrom, who's been with the Judiciary Committee and doing a great job. A few things to know about her. She's an extravagant cake decorator in her spare time. She was introduced to the legislative process in Idaho at the age of 14, where her grandmother is the Assistant Secretary of State. She's a proud mother of the smartest, most adorable 4-year-old little girl in Oregon, and she is currently looking for work as well. Thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sue Hampton, our Committee Assistant for Environment and Water. Go ahead and stand up, Sue. You deserve to be recognized. Sue has been calm, delightful, and efficient throughout the session. We owe so much to the staff like Sue, who helps make us look good through this challenging process. Sue and we are lucky that she is staying with the Legislative Assembly, and we look forward to her continued good services during the interim and hopefully next session as well. Thank you so much, Sue.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce Tamsin Jameson, our Assistant Committee Administrator of Business and Labor Committee. And as is so often the case, our staff are far more qualified than the people that they're assisting, as you're about to hear. Before working in the legislature, Tamsin received her Master's of Arts in Applied Anthropology from Oregon State. During that time, she interned with the Department of Administrative Services, assisting in staffing the Public Officials Compensation Commission, and she worked on the implementation of the plain language standard that Representative Riley brought to us. Tamsin is also fluent in Japanese, lived in Japan for 3 years between graduating from Goddard College in Vermont and starting graduate school. I hope she didn't learn any bad language while assisting in the Business and Labor Committee. She also enjoys baking in her spare time, and she, too, is looking for gainful employment. So let's give her a hand. Thank you.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I'd like to introduce the committee assistant for the House Committee on Consumer Protection, Cindy Hupp. She, like many others, did a great job of serving our committee, making us run efficiently with always a smile, and really did a great job for us. Cindy is from the Oregon's Christmas Tree District and, in fact, grows Christmas trees and nursery stock as well. She knows how to drive a forklift, just in case, and she has two kids in college and a third who's recently graduated, so she will be looking to supplement her income with her farm as well. She also bakes some pretty good Kahlua cookies. We just really want to, like all the other committee chairs, really thank our staff. They really make our job doable. Thank you very much, Cindy.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my pleasure to have an opportunity to introduce to those of you who don't know her, Debbie Neely, who has been the committee administrator for the House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee. You know, I commented to Debbie in a note that I just have so appreciated her cheerfulness, and she always greets us with a smile and just makes everything seem okay, even when it doesn't seem like it's okay. So, of course, she's going to join the ranks of anyone who has a job opportunity out there, but both of us are looking forward to taking just a little bit of a break after this session and enjoying our grandchildren.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to introduce the Ag, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities Committee Administrator, Ezra Castile. He grew up in Tillamook, went to Gonzaga, and after that, for a year, he covered the good representative who sits right in front of me here while working at the Tillamook Headlight Herald and her travails. Ezra worked in the Peace Corps for a couple years after that, volunteering in the Ukraine. And I asked him how his first session was, and he said, well, it's been an interesting experience, which I think is more a reflection on my committee and the characters that make it up than the nature of the legislature. He is currently waiting to hear on a job in with the State Department in Washington, D.C.
Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to stand in for the chair of the Education Committee and introduce to you Debbie Malone, who has been a real anchor for the Education Committee this session. Debbie worked for 7 years as a receptionist and then, thank heavens, decided to come into committee administrator work. And you know, we've had some tough times, some crazy conversations in the Education Committee, but Debbie has kept us anchored throughout, and I have to tell you, was flawless throughout. Debbie, I will say, is not looking for a job, so enjoy her. Thank you.
We want to thank all of our outstanding committee assistants and committee staff. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to introduce my subcommittee's committee assistant, Keith Bassett. Keith has been a very able committee assistant, like most of his colleagues, and I think that is in part due to his interest in political science. He's pursuing that field and has a couple of terms left at the University of Oregon before he finishes his degree. Keith grew up in Salem. He's been very active in the scouting movement and is, in fact, himself an Eagle Scout. As I mentioned earlier, he'll be finishing up at the University of Oregon very soon and is very interested in pursuing a political career as well as a service here at the state legislature. So, like everyone, to please recognize his services. And I'd also add as an additional note that Keith came late to his service on the Human Services Committee as well and ably served that committee without missing a beat coming into the middle of the session. Thank you.
Well said. We've definitely been very well served by all our committee assistants. We thank you for your service to the legislature and to your state, and wish you well as many of you now go back into a very challenging job market. You've done great things, and we appreciate your service to us and to our state. Further courtesies, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two groups here today, and I think the first one just left, but that would be the group from Ash Creek Elementary School in Monmouth, which I share with the good representative from West Salem. I think actually she has a school in her district, but I get a lot of the families in mine. And I believe if the order is correct, in the back gallery right now, I have a group from Perrydale. And is that correct? Okay, I see Perrydale waving. Perrydale 7th and 8th grade middle school students. Perrydale, which is home of the Pirates, has a long tradition of academic and athletic success, which makes it a real gem for a rural school district in Oregon. This school boasts a 0% dropout rate, logs more community service hours than any other school in the nation. With its award-winning FFA program and opportunities through the Student Leadership Development Center, Perrydale has been able to positively affect the lives of hundreds. Please welcome them to their Capitol today.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies? Let's go then to our Oregon History Minute. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Gerald Ramsey, who lives on a ranch near Madras. And he taught Native American literature at the University of Rochester for more than 30 years. George W. Aguilar Sr. is a Wasco elder and lifelong resident of the Warm Springs Reservation who won the 2006 Oregon Book Award for Creative Notification for his book, When the River Ran Wild, Indian Traditions on the Mid-Columbia and Warm Springs Reservation. The book, which also received the 2006 Award for Merit from the American Association of State and Local History, has been widely praised for its well-researched and clear-headed blending of tribal traditions and customs, written history, and personal recollections. It is the first book on the heritage of the Warm Springs people ever written by a tribal member. Aguilar was born in the Dalles in 1930 to Easton Aguilar, a native of the Philippines, and Evelyn Polk of Warm Springs. After the death of both of his parents in 1932, his maternal grandparents, James and Hattie Cimentar Polk, took him to their ranch in Warm Springs on the reservation, where he grew up in a very traditional Native environment. His formal schooling ended at age 14. He enlisted in the Army in 1949, and after service in Okinawa in the Korean War, he was treated for tuberculosis in a sanitarium in Tacoma, where he met his wife, Ella Kurup, a Ute from Utah. The Aguilars moved back to Warm Springs in 1956 and raised a family of four sons and one daughter, followed by many grandchildren. Aguilar says he wrote When the River Ran Wild mainly for his grandchildren to preserve the memory and convey to them the ancestral values of the Warm Springs people.
Thank you. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Stigler is present. Representative Jensen is off the floor. Representative Esquivel. Representative Esquivel is off the floor. A quorum is present. Message from the governor. Message from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed House Bills 3033, 3157, 3234, 3254, 3367, 2306, 2585, 2790, 2796, adopted HJM 11. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2893, 2124, 2175, 2191, 2221, 2230, 2246, 2759, 2874, concurred in House Amendments, repassed Senate Bill 147. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the assigned Senate Bills 5, 10, 23, 46, 66, 82, 183, 786. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed House Bill 3451, 2897, 3041, 3175, 3205, 2666, 2667, 2795, passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 3077, 2238, 2292, 2507, 2553, concurred in House amendments, repassed Senate Bills 16, 112, 118, 170, 171, 198, 203, 205, 235, 277, 400, 512, 515, 605, 731, 771, 862, and 929. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the assigned Senate Bill 409.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
H.C.R. 10, adjourning, sine die, regular session of the 75th Legislative Assembly. H.R. 7, congratulating Port of Morrow on its 50th anniversary.
Measures read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the first resolution.
S.C.R. 15, in memoriam, Sam Rupert Haley, 1919 to 2009.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 15. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's fitting that today we hear this resolution. June 6, 1944, which was 65 years ago this weekend, was one of the bloodiest and most significant days in the history of the world. And Sam Haley, the man we honor with this resolution, was a second lieutenant in the Army Corps of Engineers who was part of the second wave to hit Omaha Beach on that day. From D-Day to a lifetime of public service, Sam Haley was a charter member of the greatest generation. Sam started out graduating from law school in his native Missouri, but was recruited to come to Oregon to help revise our ORS. He was our first appointed legislative counsel in 1952, and he served here for 15 years. Governor McCall then appointed him as PUC commissioner, and he held a distinguished career of many facets of state government, assistant director at ODOT, director of the Commerce Department, and later director of the Employment Division. Now enter my personal story. I knew him as a child. Our families would occasionally camp together, and my father and Sam would kayak wild rivers together. But I really didn't get to know him until he volunteered to go door to door for me when I was running for public office. And I'm telling you, that man could outwalk anybody in this room, hands down, at any time. But what he had as we'd walk was this incredible backstory on state government, how things were, how they developed, and how they got to be what they are today. Sam retired in 1983. He spent his twilight years enjoying his family, his friends, golf, the outdoors. He remained active in the Salem community, the YMCA board, vice president of the Rotary, vestry at St. Paul's Church. He was married to Jean Haley for 52 years, and she was a famous Salem Southern Belle. You had to know Jean Haley and how stunning she was. You didn't forget her when you met her. He had three children, Sam Jr., Tom, and Tori Kelly, and he has seven grandchildren. We are joined today on the side aisle by his daughter, Tori, her husband, Tom, and a friend, Mary Jane Barkley Wilbur, who served down here with Sam, and a familiar face, Jim Starrett, who is Sam's neighbor and a dear friend. Thanks for coming down, you guys. Let me close by telling you the reason that Sam Haley was really beloved. A conversation with Sam was never about Sam. It was always right up to the end of his life about the good work to be done. Sam was the world's cheerleader. He always looked to encourage the next step, the next good idea. This was a man who was a joy to be around, and this spring the world lost a public servant in the grandest tradition. Please join me in supporting this resolution in his honor. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye, it's Hannah. David Edwards.
Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. SCR 15, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. We want to thank the family who is here for your service and for the service that you provided through your family, past and present. And I think, based on what Representative Berger said, that tradition is likely to continue into the future. Congratulations. The resolution is adopted. We remain under special orders of business. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2116, related to health care assessment, appropriating money, prescribing an effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority.
The question now rises upon third reading and final adoption of House Bill 2116C. Representative Nolan.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker, and thank you. Colleagues, I am delighted and honored to bring to you House Bill 2116 this morning. It is a bill that has developed over several years of work in this body and by many informed, educated, and passionate citizens who wish to see Oregon provide some leadership again on health care. This session, this bill has benefited from the work of many committees in this House and several work groups as well. We have an opportunity through House Bill 2116 to really show some leadership by expanding health care, especially preventive services, by supporting hospitals and health care providers who deliver that care to our neediest neighbors, by creating jobs here in Oregon that will be filled by Oregonians caring for Oregonians. And finally, by supporting our businesses, especially those employers who have stepped up already and are doing the right thing to provide insurance for their employees, this bill helps us begin to turn the tide and reduce the subsidy that those responsible businesses are now having to provide for uninsured patients. House Bill 2116 envisions a four-year program. It begins October 1st, 2009, and runs until September 30th, 2013. We have a four-year program because we think that's a responsible timeline to make sure that while we're providing services here in Oregon and taking some leadership to care for our own neighbors and citizens, we are also flexible enough to respond to any changes that occur at the national level so that we can adapt to them and make sure that we build on any successes that our Congress and our President can bring to us. House Bill 2116 will provide coverage for 80,000 children in Oregon who currently have no health insurance. By doing that, we expect to bring the percentage of children in Oregon with health insurance and access to preventative medical care to 95% of all children in our state and set the standard for other states around the country to aspire to what we are providing for our children. The bill will also bring an additional 35,000 low-income adults into the Oregon Health Plan, where they will have access not only to preventive and acute medical care, but mental health services as well, and addiction treatment services that will help them lead more successful and independent lives, and will also reduce the demands they place on our other public services, particularly in public safety and corrections. By collecting Oregon's fair share of federal money for Medicaid, we will be able to create 6,000 jobs here in Oregon, employing Oregonians at a time, I don't need to tell you, colleagues, our state desperately needs that kind of an economic boost. We have a unique opportunity to leverage, over the course of the 4 years that this bill will be in effect, nearly $2 billion, $2 billion in federal funding to expand health care for low-income adults and children. How does it happen? House Bill 2116 will help us get those funds. Actually, I like to say it will help us keep those funds, because those are dollars Oregon families and businesses are already writing checks to Uncle Sam for. Already writing those checks. What this bill does is allow us to make sure that money stays in our communities and cares for our children and our neighbors instead of being used for some other part of national health care programs in another state. Because understand this clearly, colleagues. Those monies will be spent on health care. And I hope you will join me in making sure they are spent on health care here in Oregon, where our citizens need them. The plan will increase reimbursement rates for hospitals that provide care for Oregon Health Plan patients so that those hospitals finally get compensated for the care that they give. The federal matching dollars will help ensure that Oregonians have access to quality health care providers. And by ensuring more Oregonians, hospitals and other providers will be able to see more paying patients rather than accruing deficits for treating the uninsured. Hospitals and other providers will get back what they pay in this tax in the form of increased revenues for treating insured patients. More than ever, Oregon families and businesses are struggling under the weight of rising health care costs. By ensuring more Oregonians, we can reduce the costs of treating the uninsured that are now passed on to the 2 million Oregonians who are fortunate enough to have health insurance. And understand this, reducing health care costs for every Oregonian is an important part of our comprehensive effort to reform our health care system. We will have an opportunity in a few moments to vote for the other part of that in House Bill 2009. But without action, the health care safety net will surely collapse. And what will happen then? We'll see increasing numbers of uninsured patients in Oregon. And we will see a reduced capacity to provide preventative care and emergency care through the Oregon Health Plan. And for those of us who have businesses that provide health insurance, that means we will end up having to pay more to insure our employees. Truly, the very worst scenario for employers, workers, hospitals, doctors, insurers would be for us to miss this opportunity to take bold action. It would be for us to do nothing. House Bill 2116 is balanced and reasonable. it is the right answer to the impending crisis in health insurance and health care here in Oregon, and it is worthy of your support.
Further discussion, Representative Bruhn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, in this debate, we'll talk a lot about money sitting in Washington, D.C., and it is enticing, almost $1 billion a biennium. But make no mistake, this free money comes at a cost, a steep cost, and ultimately an intractable cost. The most obvious cost is the cost it will exact on Oregon's small businesses, those businesses that choose to do the right thing, that now choose to provide health insurance for their workers. The businesses now doing the right thing are the same ones that will pay the price for the so-called free money that comes from Washington. It's not the hospitals that will pay. They negotiated a make-whole provision. It's not the big businesses or the unions that will pay. No worries, they're exempt. No, it's just the small businesses that will pay, those companies that create and provide most of Oregon's jobs. But as the price of a private insurance goes up, so that Salem can acquire this free money, please understand that the real price is that fewer of Oregon's small businesses will be able to provide insurance. And for those that are still able to provide insurance, their workers will see increased wage stagnation as these companies are forced to offset rising health insurance expenses. Higher health insurance costs equal lower wages. It's that simple. The free money from Washington will also exacerbate the Medicaid cost shift, which will be entirely borne on the back of private employers. Right now, Medicaid reimburses only 62 to 66% of actual costs. That means when a Medicaid patient sees a doctor, Medicaid only pays 62 to 66 cents for every dollar of cost. This results in a cost shift that may be the single largest problem in our colossally dysfunctional healthcare system. This cost shift is the extra, the premium, that private insurance and small businesses pay because Medicaid and Medicare don't pay the bills. By massively increasing our Medicaid dollars, colleagues, we will also be massively increasing the Medicaid cost shift straight onto the backs of small business. And by choosing to use Medicaid as our means to decrease the number of uninsured, rather than a tax credit system where individuals shop for and own their own coverage, we assure that our disastrous third-party payer system will continue to handicap all real efforts at cost reform. Ah, but we shouldn't worry, many are saying. We will solve these cost issues because we're going to engage in, well, cost reduction efforts. Some of these efforts are embodied in House Bill 2009. Others will be accomplished through Oregon's new health authority. Well, optimism is good, colleagues, and contagious. If we are successful in these efforts, we will be the first in the nation. We will be the first in the nation to successfully use expanded government power and intervention to reduce costs and improve outcomes. Hasn't worked in California? It's emphatically not working in Massachusetts. Never worked with Medicare or Medicaid. But hey, this is Oregon. Things are different here. But this, I'm afraid, is not even the biggest issue, colleagues. The biggest issue is this. Once the genie is out of the bottle, we will never get it back in. Once the choices in HB 2116 are made and the newly created state powers in House Bill 2009 are implemented, any hope we have of market-based health care reform will be gone. State power will grow, private choice will shrink, and we will find ourselves ever more dependent on a system in which we have less and less control. Only the very rich few, as in England, will be able to avoid this system. The rest of us will see our personal liberties slowly replaced by state coercion, price controls, and rationing. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
To the bill, thank you. As many of you know, I have worked with children for most of my working life. And I know what it's like when children don't have health care. We had an incident one time of diphtheria. And I can't tell you how frightening that is to know that you have a child with diphtheria and you may have more than one child with diphtheria. And thank goodness we were able to get on top of that. This is about children for me. The discussions that have gone on for health care since President Truman remind me of married couples who are in the midst of a divorce and fighting over the children, fighting over whatever, and the only person that suffers in all of this is the child. So today, for me, this is a great occasion for us to do more for the children in the state of Oregon who truly do need health care. And if you have babies, you know they need health care. If you have teenagers, you know they need health care. That's why one of the reasons I introduced my health literacy program was to help families stop using the emergency room and calling the doctor unnecessarily, but using a resource to cut down on those costs. I am supportive of health for families and children because it's the right thing to do.
Further discussion, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to House Bill 2116. This bill is just another in a long line of revenue-raising measures to help feed the legislature's insatiable appetite for spending while Oregon languishes in a recession. Let's put this in perspective. This House has mustered the votes to disconnect from federal tax policy that would have benefited Oregon businesses. This House has passed fees on dentists, social workers, businesses, occupational therapists, documents, and even death certificates. This House has passed a massive bonding package, putting additional debt obligations on the books for more than a decade, with few jobs having been created so far. This House has passed more than $300 million per year in new gas taxes and various vehicle fees. We are also scheduled to concur on a bill we passed a couple of months ago that takes more than $160 million from taxpayers over the next few biennia by sunsetting tax credits. And tomorrow, this House will vote on bills that make drastic increases to taxes on businesses, both small and large, and on personal income to the tune of over $700 million. So here we are today, amid all these other tax and fee bills, voting on a bill that will raise hundreds of millions of dollars through taxes on hospitals and insurance premiums, taxes that will roll downhill to small businesses. But what I find more concerning about this tax than any of the others is it's a tax to fund expanded and entirely new bureaucracies during a recession. Families across this state have less money today than they did a year ago. Families across this state are wondering if and when they'll find another job, or if they're lucky enough to still have one, wondering when it might disappear. Families across this state are forced to make tough decisions every day about how to scale back. Yet this House is making a decision to take more money from Oregonians to grow government and put that government squarely between doctors and patients. I cannot support this. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Colleagues, you've heard about the $1 billion of untapped federal money that will flow into Oregon thanks to House Bill 2116. You've heard about the many thousands of children and adults in need who will now have access to primary and preventive care. You've heard about the profoundly positive impact this will have on their futures and on the future health of Oregon. It's a remarkable achievement, an achievement for which we are justified in feeling proud. And I want to thank those legislators, representatives of industry in the governor's office, and advocates who worked for so many hours working out this final negotiation. But I want us to look at this bill for a moment from a different angle, as a jobs bill. one of the most significant pieces of workforce development that we will pass this session. It's been estimated that expansion of healthcare services in Oregon, funded by the provider tax, will create an estimated 2,100 jobs, while the additional healthcare services for uninsured children funded by the insurer's tax will create 1,500 jobs. That's a total of 3,600 new jobs in healthcare, creating an added annual payroll of hundreds of millions of dollars in Oregon. Hundreds of millions of dollars. These will mainly be frontline healthcare providers, nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians, physician assistants, professionals working in a variety of allied health sectors. They will be providing primary care and preventative care all over the state. These will be well-paid jobs, permanent jobs that will not be at risk of being sent offshore. They will allow a multitude of Oregonians to ascend career ladders. These professionals will be giving back to their communities, not only as caregivers, but as customers and as taxpayers, stimulating and growing their local economies. Thus, this bill will not only profoundly help those in need, it will also have a positive effect on those who provide them with care, and on the families of those caregivers, and on Oregon as a whole, now and in the future. With the proper investments in higher education in general and healthcare workforce programs in particular, we will make sure that we have Oregonians ready to step up to fill these new openings. Colleagues, in so many ways, this is the best kind of investment we can make. I urge your aye vote on this historic bill.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, normally I have a speech that's written, but today I just have some notes focusing on a couple areas. I'm going to start with jobs. We've heard two figures. One is 3,600 jobs. And in the opening, we heard 6,000 jobs. I don't know what it is. But regardless, I want to know who's going to fill these jobs. How many openings do we have today in the healthcare field? What kind of jobs they are? Yeah, they're great jobs. But this starts in October of this year. It's going to go over the next 3 years. A pipeline to create healthcare workers is a lot longer than a couple months. For a family practice physician, 4 years undergraduate, 4 years of medical school, 3 years residency. That's too far down the road. I think this whole notion that this is a jobs bill is, at best, just a guess. The other area that I want to focus in is the fact that this is a predatory tax, because we're picking winners and losers. And yes, there will be more Oregonians covered as a result of this bill. There's no doubt about it. But on the back of it, who's paying for it? It's working Oregonians today who are at most risk of losing their health coverage are the ones that are going to pay. Who pays the premium tax? It is only those commercial payers that are state regulated. So if you have an individual plan, you're paying for it. If you have a portability plan, you're going to pay the premium tax. Small group, you're going to pay it. Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, OMIP, the high-risk pool, you're going to pay it. And large group. So let's back out the large group, because those are probably the least likely to lose their health insurance. OMIP, I'll back those out, but that's only 19,000 people. It is primarily the individual and small group population that is most likely to lose health insurance as a result of this plan. In my small business, a number of years ago, we provided health insurance to my employees, small health clinic. I had to stop. I got a rate increase of 60% in 1 year. is a confluence of a number of factors, wasn't all just medical inflation, but 60%. I looked at my employees in the eye and said, folks, I can't do this anymore. Luckily, we have a health clinic. All my folks could be taken care of in other ways. So that was fine. But the point is, it's that small business. It is that 2 employees, 5, 10, 15 employees who are most risk to lose health insurance as a result of increased cost. 2016 is not going to reduce cost. It's a 1% premium tax. All we're doing is throwing more money into a system that is dysfunctional, absolutely dysfunctional. Back in 2008, we debated a bill, H.R. 100, and on the floor, there was a quote, "To the extent which there is significant change in government's role in financing or delivering health care, it will require action on the part of the legislature and the governor and ultimately an affirming action of the voters." This is a huge change. Its companion bill today is a huge change. Without going to the voters, folks, I think we're making a unilateral decision. In fact, this may go to the voters anyway. This is going to pass, unfortunately. It's going to change the way we provide health care, finance health care in the state of Oregon. And in 10 years, looking back, I am convinced that we're going to say this was not the right answer. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlink.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
We tend to hear mythology in our floor debate sometimes, and we live by myths, and that's a good thing. But there are a few myths involved in healthcare financing we need to talk about. There is one underlying truth in the financing of healthcare, and that's that there is no such thing as free medical care. Medical care is paid for by somebody. If you have health insurance, it's paid for out of your premiums. If you're wealthy and don't have health insurance, it might be paid for out of pocket. If you work for a company that's self-insured, it's paid for by your company. And if you don't have health insurance and you're not a part of Medicaid, then when you need health care, you follow the blue sign, the sign with the H on it, because the one place you know you'll get care is at a hospital. So if you don't have health insurance, you show up in the emergency room, you get very expensive care there, you're admitted to the hospital, you get very expensive care there, and who pays for it? The very people that we're worrying about today on the floor, the people who pay for health insurance, pay for it. And 10% of the health insurance premium is consumed by this cost shift, which is made up, as a representative from Westland pointed out, of 2 components: underpayment for Medicaid and no payment at all for the people who have no health insurance. A hospital collects about 60% for somebody on Medicaid of their costs, about 88% of their costs for somebody on Medicare, 0% of their costs by people without health insurance, and 130% of their costs by people with health insurance. The Blue Cross rates have been going up 27% a year, 20% a year, 16% a year, and a large component of that is the cost shift from the uninsured. House Bill 2116, by its mechanism, will do 2 things. It will increase hospitals' reimbursement for Medicaid. It'll increase it up to the federal maximum that it can be increased. It will be increased from 60 to 70% of costs to the absolute federal maximum, therefore reducing the cost shift for the underpayment for Medicaid. And it will put more people, 130,000, 140,000 people, on health insurance so that when they show up at the hospital, they will not be cost shifted 100% to those people with insurance. The hospitals understand this and they support this. The health insurance companies understand this, and they support 2116. They negotiated very hard to get the best deal, but they understand why this matters. When the representative's health insurance in his business was increased by 60%, it wasn't because of government action. It was because of government inaction. It was because we didn't take our responsibility and maximize the ability for people to show up in the hospitals with a payment in their hand. It's government inaction that allowed that to happen. I'll talk about that in a few minutes when we talk about House Bill 2009. The fact that there'll be a slight bump of 1%, so rather than getting a 27% increase, a small business may get a 28% increase in the interim. But ultimately, that will drive those rate increases down, so the business people who want to continue to provide health insurance will be able to do so. What will drive that health insurance away from those small businesses is our inaction, not our ability to maximize the revenue in our system to provide resources to reduce that health insurance premium in the future. Please join with me in voting yes on House Bill 2116 and increase our ability to allow health insurance in this state to survive. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I am grateful that we are dealing with mythology and trying to leave the myths and focus on reality. There's this ongoing discussion about how we can provide insurance coverage for 80,000 of Oregon's children that are currently uninsured. But what hasn't been mentioned is that 60,000 of the 80,000 currently are eligible, but are unenrolled in the present SCHIP plan. And so we're about to pass a tax increase so that we can provide health care to 80,000 children when three-fourths of them could have it today if their parents would go in and sign them up. But we've been told when this has been brought up that it's not. There will be a change because we will do a better job of enrolling them. And when asked, how will that enrolling take place? I mean, what will enable the government to go out and enroll more children now that are currently eligible than they could previously when they were still eligible? And we're told, well, we have incentives. And so if you get into what the incentives are, there will be a bounty that will be paid to sign up kids. And this could be interesting because you could end up in the post office with pictures of children on the wall saying $25 if you sign up a child, you know, for health care that hasn't been signed up. And what does it mean if we do sign them up? If you merely sign up children for health care, does that improve the frequency that they will receive the health care? Does that improve the ability to have an inadequate number of physicians provide that health care? Under the current system, you have tens of thousands of children that are presently signed up. Do you realize that only 34% of them have dental care? They all that are signed up have dental coverage. Only 34% of them actually receive the dental care. And so let's not confuse ourselves or flatter ourselves into thinking that we're making a substantial difference, that we're going to provide medical and dental care to 80,000 more children, when in reality, three-fourths of them could have that same coverage today, but don't.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise this morning not just in opposition, but strong opposition to House Bill 2116. I think we need to be very clear. The debate today on House Bill 2116 isn't about the hospital tax, which is really nothing more than a glorified loan program that makes one industry in Oregon well. The debate is about the tax on premiums, which is a thinly veiled sales tax on health insurance, something that will, in fact, get passed on to the user and increase that cost. An effort was made earlier in this session to split these two very different taxes apart from one another, but it was met with opposition in the committee. There are people in this building who have been dismissive about the premium tax. Dismissive because it's only 1%. I want to tell you, in my business, 1% here, 1% there, you know the story. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Some of you can talk about myths, lore, ideas. Let me talk about the real story as a real employer in a real county with real high unemployment. Let me talk about a 20-year record in business providing health insurance to my employees. And if you back up 20 years, we paid 100% of that coverage. And as you've moved through the years and that cost has got ever more expensive, we're now paying about 88% of the cost. In this past year alone, our rate increased 9%. 9%. And you know, it was supposed to raise just 7%, and I was feeling pretty good. Between the time when we turned in our census and when we actually got the quote back, we had to lay some people off. Now, those people have no in-health insurance anymore and no job. And because of that, our census changed. And because of that, it went from 7 to 9%. This might be a jobs bill. Take jobs away. This might be a jobs bill. Lose jobs because employers are paying ever more. People who have never owned a business may be missing this point, maybe haven't heard what I'm saying here, but make no mistake, when businesses are faced with ever-increasing health insurance costs, including this 1% premium tax, like my business has been and continues to be faced with, you can do a few things, colleagues. You can raise your deductible. You can ask your employees to pay ever more of their share of those increases. You can do like I've done and take the painful course and literally lay those employees off. Or frankly, when the costs get so high, finally you'll just go with no health insurance at all, as we've heard. I can tell you, in the reality of today's economy, I had more people employed at my business at the beginning of this year with an unemployment rate near 14% than I do today in a county that has an unemployment rate at 18%. And if you keep adding to the costs, I'll go back up to these decision points and say, like every other small business will, what will my choice be? Continue increasing my deductible, continue asking employees to pay more, switch companies yet again for a carrier, what will it be? We talk and talk and talk in this building about wanting to reduce the cost of health care and wanting to ensure.
Representative Call yields.
Thank you, Representative. We talk about it. We act like we want to do it. But do we really? We regularly impose mandates and pass policies that drive up the cost of health insurance. And now what do? We add a tax on top of that. This bill doesn't just put people at risk. It doesn't just add to the cost of health care. It doesn't add just to the risk of losing health care. It adds to the risk of having ever higher unemployment rates in a state that's already at the top or very nearly there. If the goal of this bill was simply more revenue to fund more bureaucracy, then maybe this bill works. But in my mind and in my place and in my reality and in the reality of every other small business in Oregon, our goal is to make healthcare more affordable, to retain the jobs we have, and perhaps have an opportunity to grow, not follow the trend we're on, but actually grow jobs. And as a result, I simply cannot support this piece of legislation. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it was mentioned here that this is showing leadership by going about this bill. I submitted a bill that would have allowed any individual in the state of Oregon to purchase an out-of-state policy without mandates. That bill was never heard. You would have saved approximately 50 to 55% without these mandates. It would have become more affordable for our citizens. You want to see what the problem is with health care premiums? Look around. I've met the enemy. It's us. Especially when we have a situation where it won't even be heard. That's what's interesting. We're going to dictate a Cadillac to people, even though they don't need it. I urge your no vote on this lunacy.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do. No bill this important or this complex gets to this stage without a lot of people working on it. And I want to acknowledge in particular the work of representatives of a coalition of insurance companies who came to the table intent on solving problems with us, intent on helping us understand their issues, but intent on helping us solve the problems that face their clients and our constituents. And I also want to thank particularly representatives of the Oregon Hospital Association who have worked for several months with us, long hours, robust debate, representing the interests of their members, but seeing the long view and understanding that their success is intertwined with this success. Yes, they bargained pretty hard. Yes, they stood up for their interests, but they wanted to solve a problem and not just throw up a roadblock. And my hat is off to both those groups. Access to affordable health care through this bill will mean that children go to school ready to learn and not crippled by earaches or more significant health problems. And it means that adults will be more productive on their jobs and as members of society. We approached this bill with four principles, and those principles are intact in the C-engrossed version that you have before you today. We believe we have an ethical responsibility to give all Oregonians access to basic, preventive, and life-saving health care. We do that through this bill. We have a fiscal responsibility to employers to control the cost of health care and to reverse the cost shift. And House Bill 2116 allows you to help us do that. We have a practical interest in assuring the financial vitality of our hospitals, our doctors' offices, our clinics, and other health care providers. And this bill addresses that goal. And finally, we have a leadership imperative to craft a balanced solution that works for Oregon patients, workers, and employers. Colleagues, you know that I own a business. I provide health insurance for my employees, and I am happy to support this bill because I know that this is an important step in turning the tide so that I don't have to keep subsidizing uninsured Oregonians. I don't have to keep subsidizing businesses that have not stepped up to do the responsible thing. Right now, Oregon is a donor state. For every dollar in federal taxes that an Oregonian or an Oregon business pays, we get only 85 cents back to provide services to Oregonians. Without this bill, Oregonians in West Lynn will continue to send their federal health care dollars to Alabama to insure Alabamians and not Oregonians. Oregonian businesses in Central Point will continue to send their federal dollars to New York to insure New York patients, not Oregon patients. And Oregonians and Oregon businesses in Roseburg will continue to send their federal health care dollars to Michigan to insure their children and not ours. This plan is about social responsibility. It is about taking care of Oregon children. It is about keeping our federal tax dollars here, not sending it somewhere else. And it is about employing Oregonians, nurses, medical technicians, doctors, physician's assistants, EMTs, caring for Oregon children and our Oregon neighbors. That's why Oregon Action, Children First for Oregon, Oregon Medical Association, Oregon Hospitals Association, a coalition of health insurance carriers, AARP Oregon, AFL-CIO Oregon, AFSCME, AAUW Oregon, Oregon Cancer, American Cancer Society of Oregon, American Heart Association of Oregon, American Lung Association of Oregon, the Archimedes Movement, Ader Wynn, the Bus Project, the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon, COHO, Oregon Education Association, Oregon Nurses Association, SEIU, Stand for Children, United Seniors for Oregon, and 25 other organizations that I'm not going to list to you, but it's on your floor letter. That's why they all support this bill, and I urge you to join them and me in voting yes.
This vote, this bill requires a three-fifths majority for adoption. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes no. House Bill 2116C, having received the constitutional three-fifths majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2009, relating to health care, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2009C. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill. The famous opening lines of A Tale of Two Cities were, "It was the best of times and the worst of times." And the same thing is true in the healthcare system. It is the best of times and it is the worst of times. 600,000 Oregonians are uninsured. Costs are rising exponentially in the healthcare system. There's questions about the quality of health care. The Institute of Medicine reported that as many as 100,000 U.S. citizens die in hospitals because of bad quality medical care. And the workforce is an issue, as our colleagues mentioned in the prior debate. A person may have trouble getting a primary care physician simply because they've become 65 years old. On the other hand, for those privileges of us that have access to great health care, the health care can be wonderful. When I was diagnosed 4 years ago with a particularly nasty form of lymphoma, I was able to access the best health care in the world, right here in Oregon. I found that because I have health insurance, because of conditions over the last 4 years, I've burned perhaps $1 million worth of health care. And it's been paid for partly through the money that I spent through my whole life buying health insurance when I didn't use it. We began working on this health care problem in Oregon in 1986 with the Governor's Commission on Health Care for the Uninsured, which created the Oregon Health Plan, including at that time a high-risk pool, Medicaid reform, and a proposal to require health insurance of employers. Two-thirds of that plan got implemented, and the Oregon Health Plan began, and the situation got better for a while. But by 2003, my first session in the legislature, we had a patch together the health plan. The group of representatives, including Jeff Cruz, Ben Westland, and Alan Bates, created OHB standard and started the hospital tax at that time, sunsetting this year. In 2005, we tried again. In the 2005-07 interim, we established a set of principles on how healthcare could be reformed and how we could move toward universal access to healthcare. And in the 2007 session, we voted in this chamber by 55 affirmative votes to create, to pass Senate Bill 329 and create the Oregon Health Fund Board. 55 votes in this chamber put the Oregon Health Fund Board to work. And work it did, and created a remarkable plan, working with a couple hundred citizens, with meetings all over the state. And what you have in front of you today with House Bill 2116 and House Bill 2009 is the first step implementing the Oregon Health Fund Board report to move us over the next two biennium toward a more efficient and a more fair and a more effective healthcare system. House Bill 2009 does a couple of things. It creates the Oregon Health Authority, a smaller, more agile, more focused, more manageable agency. A smaller, more manageable, more focused agency to deal with health and health care. It breaks up a 10,000 employee agency, which has become, in my mind, too big to manage, into two smaller, more focused, more effective agencies. It brings together all of the state's health and health care activities, including mental health and addiction, public health, our Medicaid program, our prescription drug program, the FEOP programs, the high-risk pool, PEB and OWEB, and allows us to begin to use market forces to change the way healthcare is delivered and financed. It charges the authority with developing a method to consolidate the state's healthcare purchasing power, not government action, but using government purchasing power in the market to drive down the cost of health care, to improve its quality, and to increase its efficiency. And it makes the health authority responsible for proposing to the legislature standards and methods for health insurance rate review. It also creates the Oregon Health Policy Board by merging two existing boards, the Oregon Health Plan Commission, the Oregon Health Policy Commission, and the Health Fund Board. And it charges that new board with creating plans for the future of the Oregon healthcare system to be brought to the legislature, plans to be brought to us in 2011 and 2013. It creates for the 2011 legislature a health insurance exchange proposal. Creates a proposal to bring back to us, including the structure of the exchange, the development of an essential benefit package, recommendations concerning the feasibility of an individual mandate and the inclusion of a public insurance option within the exchange, and proposals for regulation of the health insurance market, a proposal to be brought to us for action. It's charged with developing cost containment methods by focusing on prevention, primary care, and chronic disease management, and it's charged with establishing evidence-based quality standards within the state. Now, this bill proposes an orderly transition from where we are now to where we need to be to begin to address these critical issues of health policy. The Oregon Health Authority is established right now with the passage of this bill, but has, our assumption is, a shared director with the Department of Human Services for the next 2 years. And in fact, the activities of the authority shared with the activities of DHS through a mutual delegation authority that we give it in the bill. And in fact, all of the 2009 activities are handled within the 2009-2011 budget of DHS. The transition planning is done in DHS, including a plan for joint services, because the intention is that we'll find ways to share services between DHS and OHA. And it will not change the face of the agencies on the ground, where DHS will continue to be the eligibility organization for Medicaid as well as for the social welfare plans. And finally, the authority will become fully operational in 2011. Included in Bill 2009 are seven bills passed in the Senate for reforming the healthcare system, for increasing efficiency, for increasing effectiveness, for increasing quality, to begin workforce planning. And I'll yield the floor to my colleague from North Portland, my co-carrier on this bill, to discuss those pieces of House Bill 2009.
Further discussion, Representative Shields. Oh, Kotek, I'm sorry, I had it in the wrong order. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is an important day for health care in Oregon, and I would argue an important day for the health of our state into the future for all Oregonians. And I'm really pleased to see so many folks in the gallery today, a lot of stakeholders who have worked very hard on this bill. Thank you for being here. With House Bill 2009 in conjunction with House Bill 2116, we will put Oregon back in the lead nationally as a leader in healthcare reform, as well as a state that's willing to grapple with very complex issues such as healthcare reform and do it in a bold, comprehensive way. And what you have in front of us today in House Bill 2009 is a comprehensive bill. It's a very large bill, but this is a complicated issue. But Oregon is stepping up today to say we can handle this issue, we have a plan, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about the cost containment measures. As you know, the biggest single problem facing us today in our healthcare system is rising cost. And we need to contain costs no matter how many more people we cover. If we don't contain costs, it is completely unsustainable. That's why House Bill 2116 and House Bill 2009 are companion bills, because you need them together. Before I get into the summary of parts of the bill, I wanted to thank the good representative, Mitch Greenlick. He brought this bill to fruition here today. He did a masterful job in bringing this bill to us today. Took a lot of time and effort, and I know this was a labor of love on his part, so I just wanted to thank him. Also, again, want to thank all the stakeholders in the audience, the advocates who have worked on this for months. When we passed Senate Bill 329 in the 2007 session, many of you put your nose to the grindstone and went to many, many, many meetings to work on helping the Oregon Health Fund Board produce a set of recommendations that we could be proud of and that you would bring to this legislature and say, okay, here you go. Here's what you need to do. Write us a bill and get it done. Well, House Bill 2009 is that effort to capture the recommendations from the Oregon Health Fund Board and say, we can get this job done. There are a set of sections in House Bill 2009, specifically sections 1163 through 1200 near the end of the C. and Gross version, that reflect the language of seven bills from the Senate, Senate Bills 451 through 457, that were worked very diligently and very comprehensively in the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs under the leadership of Chair Senator Lori Montes Anderson. House Bill 2009 is truly a bicameral effort to build the best reform package possible. So how do we contain costs in this bill? Very first and very throughout the bill, you see the talk of guidelines and standards and evidence-based practice. Through this bill, we will set up the framework to set up those guidelines so we are actually paying for things that work, saying to our providers, here are the guidelines you want to follow for best clinical practice, because that's how we're going to save money in this state. And there's a variety of ways it does that, but it will build on the evidence-based work of the Health Resources Commission and the Health Services Commission. It is estimated that by setting quality standards, Oregon's system will save $4.2 billion over the next 10 years. Also contained in this bill is the ability to know what we are paying for. You would think something as important a product as healthcare, we would know what we were paying for and how much it costs. Well, we really don't know that. We cannot set a global budget for healthcare in the state until we have that information. In this bill, you have the setup for an all-payer, all-claims database, which will give us the answers we need to be able to develop payment reform strategies for truly accountable care in the state. We'll have the information, the transparency that we will need as policymakers as well as consumers to make the best choices and the most cost-effective choices. In this bill, there's a lot of talk about maximizing information technology around electronic medical records. We're going to set up the framework, particularly as the federal government looks at investing additional dollars to make sure we can expand electronic medical records throughout the state. We will be ready because of this bill, and we will set up the system so we can really emphasize patient-centered and portable care by really making the flow of information much easier and more consistent. We also deal with the end-of-life care in this bill by setting up or providing the resources to take statewide the Registry for Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, or POLST, which will ensure that wishes of a person with a serious disease are communicated to emergency responders. So you as an individual will be able to know that if you're in an emergency situation and you have end-of-life orders, that they will be followed and that your wishes will be respected in the end. The OHSU folks have been working on the Pulse Registry for several years now and is ready to go statewide, and we will provide the resources with this bill to make that happen. One of the things we also do in this bill.
Representative Buckley yields.
Thank you, Representative. One of the things we also do in this bill is to really focus on primary care. We hear a lot about, well, why don't we just pay for prevention? Why don't we pay for things that actually keep people healthy? There will be a lot of focus because of this bill on patient-centered primary care homes and prevention and primary care and learning to pay for the things that really work. And just to conclude, those are just the highlights. There will be other speakers, but this bill is all about bending the cost curve. It is about taking the work of the Oregon Health Fund Board around cost containment and taking it into reality. This is exactly what Oregonians want from their government, a smarter, leaner way of doing things that improve health outcomes and also reduce the cost of health care. I urge your I vote today, colleagues. This is a really good bill, and it's going to put Oregon on the map for health care reform. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
It was an interesting experience to come back after 12 years, and I spent a lot of those previous 10 years in the Oregon healthcare debate, and find this mammoth bill, House Bill 2009. And what a challenge it was to get my arms around it and try and understand it. And to have some background. I remember when we started talking is that regulation was the solution to our problem. And we were going to ration health care. Ration it. And it was logic without a heart, in my view. And I remember sometime, maybe at Sandy Dye or some other times, we had a talk about how the senators felt when I introduced a bill to give senators rationing health care. I'll give you a hint, it wasn't very positive. And some of the fascinating positive comments began to disappear. But this is a big bill. It has some really great points. I think it has some weak points. There's room for lots of debate, but it's something that we need. And I want to thank the good representative from Northwest Portland and lots of other people who put their hand into this. 86 amendments later, 70 hours a hearing later, we have the bill that is before us. And I think it's a bill that reflects a lesson that we've been learning in Oregon. Our efforts at regulation and underfunding haven't worked. It's time to do something different. And this bill is very largely about creating incentives and showing leadership in making change. It was about 100 years ago that Sigmund Freud wrote, "There are no accidents." And our health care's colossal disaster isn't really an accident. It's pretty well organized and planned. Whether we want to talk about overutilization with excessive and ineffective treatments, access issues, effectiveness, failure to achieve much in the way of prevention, the anomaly of having responsible payers subsidize non-payers, the impact of uncompensated care, the reality that those covered by insurance are becoming an endangered species, that government underfunding undermines the system, and that there are too many silos, and the fact that it's just plain too expensive. 40% of the uninsured lives in Oregon households earn more than $50,000 and don't have insurance. 40% of the uninsured, their household earns more than $50,000. And 70% of the uninsured come from families with one or more full-time workers. It needs to change. We've already had some discussions about it. I don't want to linger too long, but I do want to talk about it. Standardizing forms and processes for administration. 31 cents of every healthcare dollar goes to administration. It's time to do something about that. 14 phone calls later, Providence fully paid for my pre-authorized knee surgery. There's something wrong with that kind of bungling bureaucracy. This method alone will save about $1.4 billion in 10 years. We've talked about evidence-based, but we need to get more into that. The National Institute of Medicine in 2000 found 100,000 Oregonians a year die from inappropriate treatment. And just recently, the National Imaging Association, in their study of 30 states, found that a third of advanced imaging is medically unnecessary. We can save $4.2 billion in 10 years. Electronic health records. Perhaps you didn't realize that 53% of Oregon's non-federal clinicians don't have them. Or 63% of Oregon hospitals are not using electronic records. Or 54% are not using clinical decision support tools. And this is going to save us up to nearly $1 billion in 10 years, and the federal government is moving to subsidize this. We've already talked about PULSE, but violating people's final wishes when that emergency phone call is made is costing us in the neighborhood of $400 to $500 million a year. It can make a difference, and it makes a difference in the trauma of people's lives, and we need to respect people's wishes. And, yeah, death is a part of life. And we've talked about prevention and early care. If we can make that transition, I think the hardest one, that helps. But let's talk about the competitive market.
Representative Van Orman yields.
Thank you, Representative. Let's talk about the competitive market versus regulation, the exchange. It's pretty exciting. I think most of us, as we visualize this, we visualize something akin to Travelocity. Don't you love going and looking for airplane rates? And they're all over the boards. And you can fly nonstop. You can do 37 stops to Atlanta. And the prices vary, but you pick what you want and you get your choice. Well, wouldn't that be neat to have health insurance available on the internet and you could pick out what you wanted, know how much it's going to cost, buy it directly? And part of this is that creates transparency, competition, consumer choice, And part of this, too, and it's controversial, but I think it's going to work, and it's certainly worth the gamble, is Public Employers Collaborative will help drive the prices down on both sides of that equation because it's competition and it's transparent. And let's talk about the authority. Gosh, I think we should have come up with a different word. That's such a scary word. I don't much like it. But, you know, I think we slowed down and we took a deep breath about the authority. And we started looking at that and we said, you know, we don't want to jump off the cliff before we've packed our parachute and practiced. And I think that was a huge thing because now we're asking them to bring back a business plan. Let's look at that plan in 2011. And let's review the and incidentally, we were provided the authority with the authority to review, not set rates. They're supposed to review it. That's why we salvaged DCBS, Department of Consumer and Business Services. They're there to help us. And this reduces silos, and as the good chair of the committee mentioned, most of us think DHS is too big and too broadly missioned. We need to get more focused, and being focused on health care will do that. We need to look at incentives, not regulation. Imagine healthcare with prevention and early intervention, efficiencies and cost reducers, actually smaller bureaucracy with de-siloizing, care for 80,000 kids, 95% of those who now are without insurance. And this bill costs only $6 million this biennium to set the stage for real savings and changing it. Yes, in this bill, less is more. It's a Toyota-type improvement, a transforming process, one that's long overdue. I think we have two lessons. To be humane, we must also have a heart. But we also must be affordable, and we need to move from regulation to incentives and leadership. This bill does that. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier from
Tuolumne
County.
Question of the carrier, will the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, good representative. My question relates to insurance rate review. Will this bill in any way affect the responsibilities of the Department of Consumer and Business Services on premium rate review under ORS 742005?
No, it doesn't, and my opinion on that has been confirmed by testimony of the director of that department at the Full Ways and Means Committee, where she answered exactly the same question. What the bill does do, however, I think, is provide the possibility for this to be improved in the future. And one of the responsibilities of the authority is to provide for the legislature periodically new proposals for both rating standards and for procedures.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've had grave concerns about how the changes in this bill would affect the ability of policyholders to successfully contest premium rate increases through an already weak insurance rate review process. Now, DCBS and their legal counsel at the Department of Justice has assured us that this bill will not affect people's ability to contest rate increases and that it will not affect the department's responsibilities as outlined in ORS 742005. And in Ways and Means, we placed a memo from the Insurance Division and an email from their Deputy Attorney General to that effect in the committee record. My support in Ways and Means, where potentially I had the capacity to block this bill, and my support here on the floor today is predicated on this bill not affecting the department's responsibilities in 742005 and predicated on the belief that this will not inhibit people's ability to contest insurance rate increases in the future. And I certainly appreciate the good representatives putting on the record that the Health Authority Board will continue to work on the insurance rate review process to improve it as we move along in February and beyond. I will be an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise and have many similar experiences and similar thoughts that my good friend, the good representative from Southwest Clackamas County, has already articulated. However, with those similar experiences, I come down on a different side of the bill, and I do rise in opposition this morning. I take no pride or no pleasure in my opposition. However, I do take great pride in the excellent work that he and I and others, the good chair, did and participated in the healthcare committee. It was an amazing experience, and the work process that we had is like nothing I'd ever seen in the legislature, so my hat is off to the committee. This bill is much better, I believe, than the original bill, and part of that is because of the 70 hours of committee work. I would like to take this opportunity, before I bash him, to salute the chair for the great work that he has done. He really was an outstanding chair on this, the good representative from historic Tualatin County, mythology notwithstanding, colleagues. This bill does some good things that have already been articulated. For me, some of those good things are its focus on wellness and preventative care, including compensation for general practitioner doctors, the true focus point, if you will, of preventative care and wellness. I also like the aspect for the all claims, all payer database, which has already been articulated. That's real positive. But the troubling aspects of House Bill 2009 are many. First of all, it's a massive change in the health care power structure in our state. It's a shift, if you will, away from patients and doctors and to the state. It creates the authority, which will make all the rules and all the decisions. And a few of us on the committee didn't like the name the authority. It sounded too, well, authoritarian. So we came up with an alternate name, and we started calling it the Ministry of Universal Health and Happiness. Finally, it creates this state insurance plan, which will compete directly with private commercial insurance. And then lastly, it will lead to the creation, as has been mentioned, of the Health Insurance Exchange, which will be the regulatory funnel through which the authority manages price, service, and options for all insurers. Again, colleagues, this is a massive power shift, and I want to warn us that power does not exist in a vacuum. When it's gained at the state level, when it's collected at the state level, when it's aggrandized at the state level, it is necessarily lost at the public level. Please make no mistake about that. The other major consideration of this bill, and it's been talked about, are costs. Colleagues, it's been said, and I believe, that reform efforts will fail. Our stated agenda in the last bill, 2116, will fail unless we get real cost reform. Well, no worries with House Bill 2009, because on page 7, line 43, we handle that, where it says it will establish cost containment mechanisms to reduce health care costs. Colleagues, forgive me if I'm urge us to be a little bit cautious with that. First, some examples why we should be cautious. We had a bill turned into amendment that would have put an aspirational implementation date for statewide interoperable electronic health records. A lot of dates in this are 2015. This bill, and then later an amendment to this bill, would have simply said by the end of December of 2015, we're all going to be on the same page with interoperable health care records. We all know we need these. We all know they save costs. Yet the bureaucratic inertia, both from the private side as well as the public side, absolutely said, no way, we're not going to do this. So with a little measure like this on an important piece of the overall plan, for the powers that be, both private and public, say, no way, can't do this. Forgive me if I'm a little bit cautious, if you will, and pessimistic about how well we'll do the other larger measures. House Bill 2009, again speaking of costs, does nothing despite an amendment attempt to alter our dysfunctional third-party payer system. That system, our current system, which leads to price inflation through overconsumption and the absence of a true health care market. Finally, colleagues, to the point made in our last bill, if Oregon is successful in reducing costs without rationing or price controls, and despite the fact that this bill provides no real plan other than an aspirational plan, we will be the first state in the nation to do so. Colleagues, this is an important bill. And once again, I take no pride in opposing this, and I only urge you to vote your conscience, but please don't make this bill out much more than it really is. It is a change. It's a path fraught with a lot of danger, and I urge you, whichever button you push, especially if it's the green button, to please go cautiously and look at the Pandora's box that potentially opens. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2009. I do so as a legislator, as a business owner, and as an individual. The skyrocketing costs that we've heard about affect all of us in all areas of our lives. House Bill 2009, in conjunction with House Bill 2116, will address some of the most important issues that face Oregonians when it comes to health and health care costs. House Bill 2009 isn't just about health care, it's about health. In order to improve the health of all Oregonians, we need to address these issues that are hurting us the most. Per capita cost, lack of patient access, and deteriorating patient experiences. I have a unique background that I think gives me an interesting perspective when it comes to this debate, and I'd like to elaborate on it a bit. I was a faculty member at OHSU and know firsthand how access to health care affects the medical professionals we have charged with the health of our citizens. We do have universal coverage in this country, and it's called the emergency room. Unacceptable. Our doctors are having to deal with the uninsured and underinsured who they see only once in the midst of medical crises. Rather than concentrating on preventative medicine, we're relying on extraordinary and therefore more expensive measures when treating these people who come into the emergency room. This cost is then passed on to us, as we have been told, if we're lucky enough to have insurance. As many of you know, I'm the owner of a small business in Beaverton now. I employ 16 people and provide health care for all of them. I know all too well the cost of providing them with quality coverage, and it can seem like an enormous obstacle for a small business, but I, like thousands of other small business owners, continue to do it. Why? Because in the current environment, it's the right thing to do. And because the cost of not providing this basic right is simply too great. House Bill 2009, I firmly believe, will help small businesses and our medical professionals. This is the next vital step towards improving the health of all Oregonians. The Oregon Health Policy Board, established in this bill, will help contain costs, improve quality, and expand access. The three-prong approach will address the most pressing issues that face our state today regarding health care. Streamlining how our government deals with health care will reduce expenses, ultimately helping the small business community in Oregon. The Oregon Health Fund Board undertook a colossal task, and I would like to express my truly deep gratitude and admiration for their hard work. In fact, that work served as a guiding light throughout the process of shaping House Bill 2009. This is an enormous undertaking, and I often took encouragement from their efforts. In addition, having worked closely with Chair Greenlich, and all the other members of the House Health Care Committee this session, having been a part of the joint negotiations with the Senate, I know how many days, weeks, and months went into the crafting, editing, and revising of the bill you see before you. This, colleagues, truly is the product of tough collaborative effort, one in which I am truly proud and privileged to have participated. What we've accomplished with House Bill 2009 epitomizes many of the reasons I ran for office and what I hoped we might accomplish as a legislature. In closing, I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Government inaction has caused the problem. I disagree. Government action has caused the problem. And House Bill 2009 does not move us in a direction otherwise. Currently, about 50% of health care dollars are Medicaid or Medicare dollars. Government, if you control 50% of the market because you can set prices, you can write rules, and you can't control that market, I'd say you're a failure. And House Bill 2009 adds to that problem because it asks the Oregon Health, I guess it's the Health, they renamed it, the Oregon Health Policy Board, to develop and submit a plan to the Legislative Assembly by December 31st, 2010 with recommendations for the development of a publicly owned health benefit plan that operates in the exchange under the same rules and regulations as all health insurance plans offered through the exchange. If you write the rules, if you can set the prices, there is absolutely no way you can call that a level playing field. Another major concern I have is the issue, and this has been a bugaboo since we started the conversation, was the issue of restraint of trade. Sorry, Mr. Speaker, but I need a mini forklift to lift the dang thing, 613 pages. Section 26, the activities of insurers working under the direction of the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Consumer and Business Services pursuant to Section 9.1J of this 2009 Act or participating in the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange created under Section 17 of this 2009 Act do not constitute a conspiracy or restraint of trade or an illegal monopoly, nor are they carried out for the purpose of lessening competition or fixing prices arbitrarily. Now, Oregon does have some other monopolies, and the only one that's related to health care currently on the books is a cooperative program on heart and kidney transplants. This is about 5 pages of the ORS, and it goes into great detail as to what is allowed and how the state controls that monopoly. Unfortunately, the monopoly that's been put on the books has never been implemented. It's put on the books in 1993. So it's hard to tell whether or not this would have sufficed, because federal law, actually court cases, allow for a thing called state action doctrine, which means that states can create monopolies, but they have to follow several rules. Number one is it has to be a clearly articulated and expressed state policy, which in fact I believe Section 26 of 2009 probably complies with that. The other piece is it has to be subject to active state supervision. So I asked legislative counsel whether or not Section 26 of House Bill 2009 met that threshold. And this is a quote from legislative counsel. The language in the bills, because I asked for both Senate Bill 856 and 2009, however, seems to lack any mechanism by which the state would supervise any competitive conduct. Why is that a concern? Because for a monopoly to occur, that means you have to have insurance companies in the room dealing with prices. That's where what we're talking about. You are not going to get insurance companies to sit in the room if they are not absolutely assured that they're going to be protected, that there's a hold harmless clause. Because for the state, it means you get to go home at night. For the insurance company that's sitting in the room, they put you in handcuffs and haul you out and put you in a little orange jumpsuit. They will not be in that room if they don't feel that they're going to be protected. I don't believe in 6 lines in House Bill 2009 that we even come close to dealing with how this supervision is going to occur. Because without those folks' cooperation, we are not going to have an effective exchange at all. I will conclude by saying I urge your no vote on House Bill 2009, and thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'll echo some others in thanking the participants in this process, particularly the good chair from historic Tualatin County. Working on House Bill 2009 has been one of the more engaging and productive experiences I've had in this legislature. And I appreciate the leadership and the chairs involved here for their commitment to bringing 2116 and 2009 to the floor on the same day for debate, because these two measures must be linked. Cost containment, which we've heard so much about this morning, is impossible, in my view, without increasing coverage and reducing the cost shift. And increasing coverage will be unsustainable without reducing costs. Nationally, we know healthcare costs are 18% now of GDP. 18%. They're expected to rise to more than a third of GDP by 2040. We cannot afford to spend $1 out of every $5 or $1 out of every $4 or $3 in this country on health care. And we cannot fulfill the promise of 2116, our expansion bill, without reform, which is why House Bill 2009 is so important.
To get a sense of what's wrong with our healthcare system, the way we're doing business now, consider the determinants of a person's lifetime health status. 40% involve individual behavior or lifestyle choices. 30% are the result of genetics, who your parents were. 15% are the result of social factors, your educational level, where you live, your family stability, your job. Just 10% of your health determinants have anything to do with the U.S. healthcare system. What we have is a healthcare system that does not do a particularly good job at keeping people well, given the cost. A system where there are thousands of billing codes for treating illness, but few for keeping people well, and none for a cure. What makes House Bill 2009, so important and innovative are the steps it takes towards realigning the financial incentives that drive our healthcare system with health. House Bill 2009 anticipates creating incentives for the development of community-centered health initiatives. It establishes evidence-based clinical standards and practice guidelines. It would structure OHP reimbursement rates to reward comprehensive management of diseases and cost-effective procedures, including an emphasis on primary care, web-based office visits, and telemedicine consultations. It anticipates the creation of a standard benefits package that distinguishes between prevention care, for which there should be little or no cost sharing under the bill, and elective procedures, for which the patient should have considerable skin in the game. The representative from Grants Pass is right in the fact that government is the state's largest purchaser of health care. Government is responsible in large part for how the system looks today. But that gives us an extraordinary opportunity and obligation to be part of the solution. That gives government an extraordinary opportunity to be part of the solution. To me, that means we must move government towards these common sense solutions to reducing costs. We do have an obligation to tackle the unsustainable inflation of healthcare costs. This bill makes an awfully good start.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I appreciate this opportunity to talk about health care reform, but I want to move a little bit further into this. There is evidence that supports that liability reform does lower costs. There were two bills that were introduced in the Carriers Committee earlier this year, and neither one of them were given any notice. In fact, the carrier of this bill that you're listening to today signed on to one of those bills. But let me just give you a snapshot of what those two bills were. The first one was House Bill 3397, deals with screening panels. There are 27 states throughout the country right now that have some type of resolution dealing with tort reform and also liability. The screening panels, there's 13 states out of the 27 that have those. And we were looking at doing that here in this state. This was the bill that the carrier signed on to. The other one, House Joint Resolution 46, mirrored that of tort reform, placing a cap on non-economic damages, and by doing so, lowering the cost of malpractice, and in turn, lowering the cost of health care and making it more affordable. That bill also did not get any attention and moved forward. But what House Joint Resolution 46 did was it mirrored that of what, if you recall, ballot measure 34 was back in 04, and it increased the cap to $1 million, tying it with a CPI. Two bills that we could have strongly considered as we move forward when we're trying to deal with health care reform.
Further discussion. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to House Bill 2009, and for two primary reasons. The first of which is this. I want to be very clear, on the lack of clarity within this bill about cost savings.
there's been a lot of confusing conversation, not only during the debate of this bill in committee, but here on the floor. I want to point out that the Oregon Health Fund Board report dated November 2008 estimated a range of savings from $830 million to $1 billion per year. Big numbers. As the bill worked its way through the committee process, estimates went down to between $333 million to $567 million per year in savings. And yet, on the floor today, during its opening, the representative from North Portland says $4.2 billion worth of savings. Again, my point here today is the lack of clarity about any savings. Because, colleagues, I would say you need to look at the current staff measure summary from last week. And I quote, House Bill 2009 directs the Oregon Health Policy Board to begin to implement, through the Oregon Health Authority, a variety of specific health care reform initiatives that will, these are the key words, that will hopefully reduce health care costs. So where are we, colleagues? $830 million, $1 billion, $333 million, $567 million, $4.2 billion? Or as the measure summary itself says, are we just there at hopefully? If that isn't a lack of clarity, I'm not sure what is, but it is certainly confusing. Now, lack of clarity aside, on the savings issue, there's one other more important issue in this legislation which I take serious exception to. During last February's special session, the good representative from the historic Tualatin County, the carrier of this bill, said, and I quote, "The extent to which there is a significant change in the government's role in financing or delivering health care will require action on the part of the legislature and the governor, and ultimately an affirming action of the voters." And ultimately, an affirming action of the voters. I find it very unfortunate that this legislation does not include language referring this to the voters for that affirming action. This language was also offered to and rejected by the committee. Colleagues, I urge your no vote on House Bill 2009.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Greenlich, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. First of all, there's a long list of thanks that I want to acknowledge as we close this debate. First, to the governor and his staff, to the Health Fund Board and its staff, Barney Spate and Carol Robinson, to the House Health Care Committee for 21 individual hearings, over 70 hours of hearings on these bills, to the committee staff, Sandy Thiele Cirka, Roxy Queller, and Laura Eads, who you met earlier. Certainly the Legislative Council, this was a huge effort, their biggest effort of the year, and I need to recognize Lori Freeman, Dexter Johnson, and all those other councils and editors, and certainly Midge and Kenyon for keeping us informed of the 86 amendments as they came through. The Legislative Fiscal Office was important. John Britton, Kim Tu, OPHR, Dr. Janine Smith, Tina Edlin, Sean Kilmer, and their entire staff for the analysis. Senate staff was involved in this, Connie Seeley, Amy Fauver, Aaron Farr, and the great House staff, Gene Atkins and Laura Patton particularly. and especially to Dr. Bruce Goldberg for his wisdom and his guidance. I also want to thank all the healthcare advocates, and you saw letters from them on the floor today for their input and for their patience as we work through this bill. Finally, my staff, Tom Powers, who did an extraordinary job, and the marvelous Tom Burns, who's sitting with me today in case anybody asks me a question, because he's the one who's crafted this bill and knows it inside and out and has just managed its process throughout. We reviewed 86 proposed amendments to the bill, of which we accepted 25. I really worked hard to get the opinions of the minority worked into the bill to the extent possible, and it's a better bill because of their input. Both of the vice chairs of the committee, Representative Harker and Representative Maurer, left their mark on this bill. The intention of this bill is to fit into whatever happens on the national scene. We're hearing debate daily now that there'll be something happening in national health care reform, and I certainly hope that happens, although it was attempted in 1915, in 1935, in 1950, in 1973, and in 1993 to no avail. I hope we'll get some action this time, and if we do, this bill will fit us right in to be able to take advantage of whatever happens on the national scene. These two bills that we acted on this morning improve access to health care in Oregon, reduce the cost shift, thereby reducing the increase in health insurance premiums, and improve the quality of health care. In an editorial piece in this morning's Oregonian, Elizabeth Hovde, in recommending acceptance of House Bill 2116, ended her column this way. She, you remember, is the conservative columnist for the Oregonian. While lawmakers should support House Bill 2116 and increase access to care, they must vow to be relentless in finding ways to help control health care costs. Whether we do reduce the cost by $4.3 billion, which incidentally is the estimates of 1 year divided by 10, multiplied by 10, as what the representative said, or maybe not, maybe half that, maybe a third that. Whatever, we need to take action. To paraphrase President Roosevelt, this is not the end of the job reforming the health care system today by passing these bills, or even the beginning of the end. But it is the end of the beginning. We can and we must reform the health care system in Oregon. We shall wait no longer. I ask for your aye vote on behalf of all Oregonians who look to us for solutions to their critical problems. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. House Bill 2009C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We are now under propositions and motions. Colleagues, my plan is to just entertain a couple of motions, so if you've got the bill motions, if you're open to holding those till another day. I'm seeing nodding heads from those carriers. Propositions and motions, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 3332 be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules.
Representative Maurer moves that House Bill 3332 be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. The clerk will read the bill in a full summary.
House Bill 3332, relating to elections, refers and rolled House Bill 2009 to people for their approval or rejection at next regular general election, declares emergency effective on passage.
Per our House rules, the motion to withdraw a measure from committee is not debatable. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3332 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. The motion to withdraw House Bill 3332, having not received the required 31 vote majority, is declared failed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 2465 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Hanna moves that House Bill 2465 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. The clerk will read the bill in a full summary.
House Bill 2465, relating to subtraction for health insurance premium payments, creates subtraction from federal taxable income for health insurance premium payments made during tax year by individual taxpayer for health benefit coverage of taxpayer. Taxpayer, spouse, or dependents applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2010.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 2465 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes no. The motion to withdraw House Bill 2465, having not received the required majority, is declared failed. Further propositions and motions that must be done today. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2600, relating to transient lodging for persons with disabilities. House Bill 2649, relating to taxation, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 3405, relating to state finance appropriate money, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 3495, relating to law enforcement contracts policy and data review committee. House Bill 3496, relating to health insurance.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. Final reading of memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 76 relating to Klamath River Dams and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 241 relating to actions for possession of property and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 274 relating to administrative law judges and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 310 relating to hexachloramic acid and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 313 relating to evidence. Senate Bill 495 relating to taxation of interest in electrical transmission lines and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 498 relating to radioactivity of laws applied by Department of Revenue and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 560 relating to dissolution of county service districts. Senate Bill 728 relating to controlled substances. Senate Bill 734 relating to health insurance. Senate Bill 780 relating to acid forfeiture oversight advisory committee. Senate Bill 971 relating to training costs of employees of governmental agencies. Senate Bill 973 relating to life insurance.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, June 9th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and consideration of House Bill 3405 and House Bill 2649 be made special orders of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, June 9th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats, we have a guest for our caucus meeting today, so please grab your lunch as quickly as possible and join me in the caucus room.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we will caucus. Please grab your lunch and come to the caucus room as quick as possible.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to announce something good that happened here the other day. Our good friend, the representative from Tigard, has been awarded a Ph.D. from Portland State University.
Congratulations, Dr. Galizio. Further announcements, I would just note, colleagues, we are not having an afternoon session today, but we do plan to have an afternoon session on Tuesday. So we will plan to have a morning session, break, and then come back in for a likely afternoon session based on the volume of bills we have accumulating on our calendar. Any further announcements? Representative Galizio, did you want to be in the queue?
No.
Oh, okay. Remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, one might get the impression that with the media buzz and the attention that this is the session about health care. I was impressed that the governor was here today. I was surprised. He usually gives me some notice that he's coming, but it was good to see him in the area. But I don't think this is the session about health care, and I spared you a five-minute speech just to say this. I appreciate the hard work that's been done on the two bills that we passed. I understand how important they are to folks. But this is not the session about health care. This is the session about Oregonians hurting, Oregonians without jobs. And I believe we just heaped more trouble on Oregonians without jobs. The argument and the debate would have had a lot more integrity if in this building we had had a serious discussion about tort reform. The argument and the debate for health care reform would have a lot more integrity, in my opinion, if we could plug the holes where small mandates relating to health care go in and out without any possible filter or prevention. And yet, we move ahead with this railroad for health care reform. If you want health care reform, in my opinion, Mr. Speaker, you'll start helping small businesses and families to jobs that pay wages, that pay taxes, and make it possible for them to pay health care premiums. That's where you start. Is it a perfect system? No, we heard that today. But you start with jobs, with people that can afford to take responsibility for their families. You don't start with blinders on about this economy and call it health reform. It's not a pretty system in its underbelly. It's dysfunctional, as members of my party and the other party said. But with its deficiencies, with its dysfunction, with its inability to help those in need at times, the research that we have in the medical field, the health care that we provide, the way that we subsidize the rest of the world with pharmaceutical research and all the rest of it, in my opinion, with its flaws and its warts, still is the best system with the most possibility in the world. Let's get to work on putting Oregonians to work before we call this the health care reform session. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are there further remonstrances? Representative Jensen, adjournment.
Mr. Speaker, move the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m., Tuesday, June 9, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. on Tuesday, June 9, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.